Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to GE Shipping earnings call on declaration of its financial results for the quarter two of FY 2023. At this moment, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, you may click on the Raise Hand icon to ask a live question. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. G. Shivakumar, Executive Director and CFO at The Great Eastern Shipping Company Limited, to start the proceedings. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yes. One minute. Let me just. Yeah. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the results presentation for Q2 and H1 FY 2023. Thank you for joining us today. Let me go through quick highlights that we'd like to present. We have Mr. Bharat Sheth, our Deputy Chairman and Managing Director, here with us, so I won't take up too much time on the presentation. Then we can get into a Q&A, so that we can get into a Q&A. Let's go forward. Standard disclaimer: we don't make forecasts of our earnings. Our market is quite difficult to forecast, and therefore, we don't make forecasts of our earnings. What we're trying to do is explain what has gone into the past performance and what are the various factors lining up to be. So highlights. We have just declared our best-ever quarter of profits. Our previous best was in Q2 FY 2008-2009. That was a quarter just before we had a global financial crisis, and that was just about 500 crores. In this quarter, we've had a profit of 688 crores. That's on a standalone basis, and on a consolidated basis, we have a net profit of 769 crores. The half-year profit was, of course, 1,100 crores and 1,200 crores, standalone and consolidated, respectively. We declared a second straight interim dividend. That's our second interim dividend for this year. And in the last, after the last five quarterly meetings, we have declared, four of them have ended with our declaring, the board declaring an interim dividend. We also finished the quarter, thanks to the strong cash flows. We finished the quarter with more cash than debt. Therefore, we are now net cash. We are zero net debt. In fact, we are negative net debt. As you know, we also normally present the, what we call the normalized financials, which strips out the impact of the exchange rate movements on our results. This time, there's not much difference between the normalized and the reported results. So marginally up and down, it's a couple of percentage points up and down in terms of the impact on the results. We'll come to the net asset value. Yeah, and this is just a little bit of the history of what's been happening to our earnings. Obviously, the last couple of quarters have been very, very strong, which you see reflected in this graph. You would have seen this management commentary by Mr. Bharat Sheth. Again, this is to do with the markets and what has happened in terms of the results. The last bit is important, the last couple of paragraphs. We have also, we're also seeing continuing strength in oil prices, and that seems to be having a positive impact on the offshore oil field services business as well. So we've seen an uptick in asset values. We've seen an uptick in contracting in the international market and in rates that are being awarded in the international markets. Again, all of this comes with a word of caution. High inflation, high interest rates, there is certainly potential for a global recession, or at least in significant parts of the global economy, and that could affect demand for commodities, and that's what really drives our business. So that's something to keep in mind. Tankers did exceptionally well in this quarter. That's crude and product tankers. They were quite strong in the last quarter. They built on that strength in this quarter, that is in Q2 of FY 2023. LPG carriers continue to be all on time charter. The improvement rate in rates is because we sold one of the smaller ships, which was on time charter at a slightly lower rate. That's one of the main reasons for improvement in rates. We also had in the previous quarter a dry dock which would have skewed this. Dry bulk rates have come off quite a bit in the quarter, down 20% on average from the previous, that's the immediately preceding quarter. And after this also, we have seen some drop in rates, that is in the month of October. Now, one of the things that's happened is that we've had a very big change in our net asset value. And we ended March 22 with a net asset value of 618 rupees a share. We are declaring a standalone net asset value of 809 rupees a share. The contributions to this, and we've just taken the main contributions, cash profit of 96 rupees a share, that's PAT plus depreciation. Fleet value has gone up by 106 rupees per share, most of it due to revaluation of ships, some of it due to the exchange rate changes because the rupee has depreciated against the dollar. We, of course, have paid in May and August, we paid two interim dividends for a total of 10 rupees 80 paisa. So that took away from the net asset value since it was an outflow to the shareholders. So that's how our standalone net asset value moved. Just going back a little bit in history, and this is since March 2017, this is how our standalone net asset value has moved. The CAGR of the NAV has been 17% over this 5.5 year period. So all the way from 337 up to 809 rupees per share. Coming to consolidated net asset value, that's gone up as well. That's gone up to from 679 rupees per share in March to 935 rupees per share. For the first time in many quarters, we are seeing a significant marking up of values of offshore assets. So rigs were all on average marked up by about $12.5 million at the midpoint of the range. Offshore vessels also saw some marking up in values. And that's what helped the net asset values to go up even more on a consolidated basis. So we had a 190 rupee increase in standalone net asset value. But if you take it on a consolidated basis, you have a 256 rupee increase in the consolidated net asset. Looking at the shipping markets, the story is pretty clear. If you look at the graph, we were down in the dumps on the tanker markets last year, all the way up to Q4. Which reflects in the rates you can see there. So in YTD FY22, Suezmax has earned $5,500 a day. In YTD FY23, they've earned $41,000 a day. This again is not our average. This is the market, spot market average. MR tankers had a spectacular increase from $6,000 a day to $36,000 a day. Now, what caused this increase in change in trade patterns? So more of west-east and east-west trade flows, shortage in middle distillates in the Atlantic basin, which resulted in longer movement of products, we have some statistics on the increase in trade. So we have demand on both the crude and the product trade back to pre-pandemic levels, which is an important milestone because we've been expecting this all the way from middle of 2021 and it did not happen, but we are finally there. And this is despite Chinese demand actually not growing and because of the lockdowns. The fleets have grown, but the very heartening fact is that the order book for crude and product tankers is between 4% and 5% for both of them. Coming to dry bulk performs significantly worse than in the previous quarter and in the previous year. So you had a 50% drop in Capesize earnings year on year. We also had a drop between Q1 and Q2. and that was more pronounced in the case of the cape size and less in the case of the smaller vessels. You can see it on the right as well in the Supramaxes. We dropped by about 24% year on year. We haven't mentioned that number here, but it's dropped by probably 15 to 20% in the from Q1 to Q2. Again, trade growth has been flat to negative YTD over the previous year. And again, because of weakness in the iron ore trade, which has been compensated to some extent by the minor bulk, that weakness in the iron ore trade explains why the cape sizes have been so weak. We had lower congestion, especially for cape sizes, and that released a significant amount of the fleet into the market, and that again changed the demand-supply balance. The current order book to fleet ratio continues to be, again, not high, and therefore gives some semblance of comfort for that we don't have too much of a supply overhang going forward. LPG, the spot market really doesn't matter or really hasn't affected our earnings because our ships were on time charter through this quarter. However, markets have been stronger. YTD FY23 versus FY22, and they've become even stronger now over the last 2 or 3 weeks. However, our ships are 4 LPG carriers, all are on time charters and therefore will not be participating in this market. Looking at fleet supply, I already mentioned this about the order book. So we have about 4 to 5% for the crude and product tankers. We have about 7% for the bulk carriers. Asset prices, of course, have gone up, reflecting what has happened to earnings. Dry bulk have come down by about 15 to 20% during the quarter, again, reflecting what has happened to earnings. And that we've seen, of course, reflected in our net asset value. Scrapping I won't go into because it's been nothing significant since the markets have been quite strong. Coming to the oilfield services business, Great Ship India Limited, there is an increasing number of cold stack rigs, but there are also more rigs coming off from idling and moving into contracts. We'll see it here. There's a gradual improvement in utilization and the rigs under contract. So we are back again to pre-pandemic levels. If you recall, in early 2020, we said we seem to have turned a corner in the drilling market, oilfield services market. Unfortunately, COVID came in and derailed that recovery. But we have the market has got significantly tighter since then. Of course, we've had removals of rigs as well. We have seen very much improved pricing coming in from contracts that have been announced in the Middle East by listed players. So there is a lot of optimism in the market and significant amount of tightness in the market for jack-up rigs. This is also reflecting in a slightly lesser way on the vessels. We have one rig coming off contract in H1 FY24, which needs to be repriced. We have 6 vessels coming off contract between now and March 23, and that's the other schedule. And the other 2 rigs are coming off contract in FY25. Looking at a couple of financial ratios, and this is our, we've been showing this graph for some time. So we levered up in 2000 in FY17, 18, 19 to buy ships. And what has happened since then is that we've had very strong cash flows because those investments paid off and we are now down to negative net debt. Again, this is all standalone numbers. Just an indication of where we stand today. We are still trading at a significant discount to net asset value. Our net asset value, as I showed you earlier, is about 935 rupees. In the middle of the range for offshore asset values. We are still at about a 40% discount, 35 to 40% discount to those values. We continue to make initiatives on the environment. We try to save on fuel consumption and therefore reduce our CO2 emissions. For anyone who's interested in our ESG efforts, we have a lot of information available on our website under the tab called Sustainability. We of course published, last year we published our first ESG report. And of course we are looking at different things that we can do in order to reduce our emissions. Thank you. That brings me to the end of the presentation. And we'll now throw the floor open to you for questions, and we'd be happy to discuss our markets with you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please click on the raise hand icon available on the toolbar, or you may click on Q&A icon to raise hand or type your question. The operator will announce your name when it is your turn to ask a question. Please accept the prompt on your screen and unmute your microphone while proceeding with your question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Amit Khaitan from Laburnum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Firstly, congratulations on a very good set of numbers. Just coming to the tanker markets, so we've seen very good rates and the fundamentals look very supportive. My question was based on your understanding of the market, what are the main two or three risks or rather events, as you like to say it, that you as management are most mindful of, which could take freight rates, you know, on a sustained basis back to the levels that we saw for much of 2021?
So, A, we don't think that can, that should happen again, because as we know, Cal 21, the average for the year was at a 31-year low. So that's unlikely to happen. Can the market downward correct? Yes, they could. And what could drive that downward correction? Although I don't believe it's going to be anywhere close to the Cal 21 number, but some correction can always take place. And it all depends on, I guess, the level of demand destruction, possible demand destruction on recessionary fears and on what can happen on interest rates and the whole impact of, you know, that on demand for some of the products. Particularly on diesel oil. But if you look at the inventory levels, they're all running pretty low. So hopefully some demand destruction will be able to take in a strike, but a lot more demand destruction than currently anticipated can upset the apple cart.
Got it. And you have a preference for operating in the spot market, but, you know, given the kind of rates that we have been seeing lately, are you tempted to lock in more time charters? And, you know, broadly, how are you thinking about this right now? And what would your, you know, tanker mix be in terms of spot versus time?
So currently, so we need to break it up into crude, gas, as you know. So when we talk tankers, we've got three subsections, right? Crude, clean, which is petroleum products, and then LPG. LPG is all fixed. On the product tanker side, we have two vessels that we fixed a few months ago, so at pretty elevated levels. We have two of the tankers, or two of the product tankers, which we had fixed before the big rise in the market. They come back to us in the next few weeks, so that balances out what we had fixed at some elevated levels. Will we fix more in the product sector? We are at this stage uncertain. Obviously, some of the numbers which we are seeing for short periods of time are very tempting. You know, with utilization levels now running at 90%+, a little, you know, pickup in demand can really take this market up even further. So we've got to be very careful. On the crude side, we don't have the level of exposure ideally we would have liked to have had. As you're aware, we've sold one ship, so we've taken some money off the table. Basically, by selling a ship, all you have done is, you know, you have encashed the next 4 years of sort of earnings, right? Because the ship was a little over 16 years of age. So we've taken some money off the table. So I think we are currently going to keep the rest of the fleet spot. Obviously, this is a moving target, and whatever I might say on this call, our thinking could change tomorrow.
Understood. Have the period markets rates moved in line with spot, or is the market still skeptical?
No. Period rates have gone up considerably. So there is a lot of optimism in the market, and you know, but as night follows day, as you know, when everybody is very optimistic, there's always something that that plays out which was unanticipated. So, but I think there are two critical events. One is the maritime embargo on crude oil, Europe v. Russia, which kicks in on the 5th of December. And then similarly, there is going to be an embargo on movement of petroleum products on the 5th of February 23. And we've got to see how both these very, very important events play out.
Understood. Lastly, we've seen some softness in the dry bulk market. So are you seeing opportunities for deployment of capital there?
So as Shiv has just mentioned, values have corrected 20%. We think at this stage that if this market were not to pick up, and this market has a much greater bearing on some of the recessionary trends we are seeing globally, particularly a lot of the real estate construction levels that has come off in China. And if, therefore, markets were to remain weak for, let's call it, another 6 months or so, it is possible that values could drop another 10-15%. It's possible. We, at this stage, with this first 20% correction, would still prefer to sit on the sidelines.
Got it. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Nigam from PNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So, congratulations on a great set of results. So, my first question is on the EU's plan to impose a price cap on Russian oil and eventually sort of move away completely from Russian oil and oil product imports. So how do you think is that going to impacting demand and supply, and could there be further upside? That's my first question.
As I said, we are now at a 90%+ utilization level, both for crude oil as well as for petroleum products. Now, once you hit these levels of utilizations, even the slightest uptick in demand or the slightest uptick in trading patterns can lead to, pretty meaningful uptick in freight rates. Once you hit 90%+, anything can happen to this market on the positive side, right? And that is precisely one of the reasons why we would like to keep whatever we have now, pretty much in the spot market. And even if, a lot of people have asked us this question before, I might as well answer it now, which is that what if this war were to be called off tomorrow? What would happen? And would the markets all collapse, et cetera, et cetera? In our thinking, even if the war were to come off, I think Europe is unlikely to go back to the energy dependency that they had on Russia previously, pre the war. And from whatever we are reading, people are going to be a lot more cautious. And some of these newer trade routes that we are seeing, which is all adding to ton-mile demand, is likely to continue.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense. So the second question that I have is on the offshore side. So that, you know, pretty good improvement in on the revenue side. EBIT margin is in mid-teens. I just wanted to check, is there any one-off over there? And is this kind of EBIT margin something that we can expect in the future?
So,
next 2-3 quarters?
As we discussed, I don't know if you were there in the last quarter's investor presentation. We had mentioned that we received a pretty lumpy insurance claim. Last time people had asked us when it's likely to come in, and we said in quarter two. So that money has come in. So that, to that extent, of course, there is an positive impact on the results. But, you know, instead of discussing it on a quarterly basis, which really makes no sense, I think the important thing is that as the CFO has also just mentioned now, and we mentioned it in the last investor presentation, the worst seems behind us, and we are seeing meaningful improvement more in the rig side, where utilization levels are probably now hitting 80%. And on both sides, there has been an improvement, but it's still in the low to mid-50s. The utilization level, but that will come up because for every rig that is incrementally deployed, you need a lot of support services, and you can call the ratio as roughly 1 to 3, 1 to 3.5. So for every time a rig gets deployed, you need, you know, between 3 and 4 boats to support the activity of that particular rig. So all in all, I would say ignore, you know, some of these one-time incomes or expenses, and just take the bigger picture, which is that there's a lot more optimism in that sector as well.
Fair enough. So last question from me. LPG market, I think 6 months back, my own view was that it's kind of peaking out. You know, fairly aggressive supply growth that was coming in. Now what has happened is that there is a shortage of LNG, and there is effectively, you know, very little LNG growth till 2025. And what very high LNG prices is doing is it's fueling the demand for LPG in turn. So could LPG, you know, despite a fairly strong, you know, fleet outlook, fleet growth outlook, could it stay strong for another couple of quarters?
You know, it always could, right? As I said, we don't look at all these quarterly things. We look at the big picture, and clearly there is a lot of supply of LPG coming in the first half of 23 in terms of number of assets. But, you know, how the arbitrages play out. So the big trade in LPG is the arb spread between Asian LPG and US LPG, right? And a lot of this spread is determined on also the weather and the demand for domestic LPG in the U.S. So if you get a warm winter, there's less demand and therefore more exportable commodity. If you get a strong winter in the United States and there's greater domestic demand, then you have a drawdown on inventory and less LPG to export. That's number one. The number two is also a lot of this is driven by delays in the Panama transit. Now, this has nothing to do with, you know, the big headline news of how many ships are delivering and what is the demand for LPG. It is also to do with these significant delays. So there are ships that wait after loading for 20 and 25 days to transit the Panama Canal. And the only way you can go U.S. to the Far East predominantly is Panama. And if you avoid Panama and you go right around the Cape, you're in any case adding a lot more to ton miles. So there are a lot of these factors that really determine trade rates. These are all singular events. And I've often said it that, you know, don't try and call these markets because nobody can forecast these events. So.
No, fair enough. That's very helpful. That's it. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Bajaria from Honesty and Integrity Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for providing the opportunity. So our tankers, crude and product, if you can just broadly help us understand that in which trades are they currently deployed? Is it like Middle East to India or which trade our vessels, our tankers are currently deployed?
So basically they're deployed, sometimes they get deployed into India, sometimes they get deployed internationally, but broad brush, if you see about 75% of our revenue, approximately, between 70-75% of our revenue comes from international trade, and the balance comes from Indian trade.
Oh, okay. So largely it is international trade.
Yeah. So we will try and optimize, you know, so there will be certain months when we are, you know, we get better remunerated on Indian trades. There are certain months we get better remunerated on international trades. And we try and keep an exposure across regions because each region, so when we say, you know, say, let's say we say the tanker market is doing well, it does not mean every region of the world is doing well. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are times when the disparity between region A and region B can be X or 2X or 3X. So a lot of this is, a lot of the end earnings or average earnings are determined by how you have positioned your fleet and where you have positioned your fleet.
Got it. Understand. And for do we want to increasingly deploy our fleet for imports from Russia, or given the regulatory and, you know, sanction related risk, we just don't want to do that and we want to stay away from that trade?
So we haven't done any trade from Russia from the time of the declaration of the war or the you know, the Russian troops moving into Ukraine. We haven't done anything, and we have no intention at this stage of doing anything.
Got it. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Himanshu Upadhyay from O3 Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so my first question was, earlier we used to have a philosophy or a thought process that the cash on balance sheet would be equal to what principal and interest and OPEX will be required in case of tough time, and some cash for the acquisition if the opportunities happen. Okay. With balance sheet becoming more of net cash, okay, what amount of cash you would like to have on balance sheet or build cash for the opportune time? And what would be the guiding principles for that? Will it be X number of ships we can expand, or how would be your thought process now versus historically whenever balance sheet used to be always leveraged? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say 2007-8 versus today.
Yeah, I've understood the question. So, you know, we don't keep a target for how much cash should we have on the balance sheet, right? What, with the current availability of cash and the fact that we are net debt zero, or in fact negative, and that we have capability to leverage, we will leverage at the right time with two objectives in mind. Clearly, one is to modernize the fleet. As you know, we do have an aging tanker fleet, and there is a need to modernize it. And, of course, we wish to grow the business. Now, I mean, growth, when I say grow the business, means grow the number of assets that we currently operate. So whatever cash we built, today it is $500 or $600 million. And maybe, you know, the later that we expand, the greater will be the cash built. But it's not as if we say, okay, now, you know, we will struggle to find utilization of this cash. One thing I can assure all of you listening on this call, that at the right time, we will have capability to deploy this cash and deploy it in a very profitable manner. That's the end objective. So whatever cash we build, we are pretty comfortable with.
Okay. And vice versa. The dividend we have been paying regularly and in last 3-4 quarters, okay. So what would be the dividend philosophy from here on if, let's say, the market situation remains like this for next 3 to 4 quarters?
Well, a little broadly, I don't think that will change. We will keep paying out, let's say, if the markets remain strong over the next few quarters or whatever, few years, whatever that time frame will be, we'd be happy to keep declaring interest.
Okay. And one thing on offshore, we have seen a pretty strong improvement in the rates between Gulf and for the offshore rigs. Okay. What is happening in Indian subcontinent, okay, where we are there? So is the relationship 1:1, so similar increase? Because generally Indian markets have not always been in correlation because we are allowed to take older ships and all that stuff. So can you elaborate on how has the Indian market or subcontinent behaved in the last 3 months or 6 months versus other markets?
Yeah, so clearly what has happened in the Middle Eastern markets, as you very rightly pointed out, Indian markets tend to lag. And we lag for two reasons. One is, of course, the fact that we have these incredibly old rigs which cannot be housed anywhere else, that very sadly are allowed to operate in Indian waters. So that is one reason why there is a lag. And of course, the other reason is the whole way this L1 system works in this country. But, you know, it is what it is, and we can't go and change it all. Although we do believe that there are going to be now some newer age norms that are kicking in, and the regulator has also just now issued some guidelines which will mean that even the older rigs will have to spend monies towards safety, to enhance their safety norms, what they call Modu 89. I'm not going to go into all the details, but it's all available in print, the new requirements. So that's at least a good beginning as far as India is concerned on the drilling activity. Now, in terms of percentage increases, we have seen the Middle East has probably doubled the kind of earnings that are now being offered in the Middle East, have probably doubled. In India, I would say closer to a 70-odd percent. Yeah, maybe 70, maybe 80% improvement in that region. We still don't know what's going to happen because there's a tender in process. We'll wait to see the levels at which it is awarded, and I think we will then have a much better fix. But this is what we think will happen because you can't lag it too much. Otherwise, you know, people will just move away from India. And then, you know, you won't get rigs in India in any case.
And one last thing, basic question. See, historically, we always had a financial leverage on balance sheet, okay? And which would always result in movements on the NAV side, okay? Because whatever increase was happening, the debt was not increasing, and hence the equity would be much more faster moving or NAV. With more cash and this type of balance sheet, should we expect that NAV should not give a negative surprise also, and even if it goes slowly on the upside, but it would not give that much negative jerk what we saw in, let's say, 2008 to 15 type of time period.
Look, if you get a Lehman crisis, right, what happened in 2008? There was a significant black swan event and capital availability just dried up, and therefore you saw these big corrections in asset values. Now, if you get that kind of an event again, of course, there'll be a sharp correction in net asset value, right? However, if you ask, you know, compared to 2008, when we were really completely invested, today we've got plenty of cash. So would we welcome a big correction in asset values? Very clearly we would. So, you know, everybody gets very excited about these quarterly results, which is really a waste of time in many ways. Eventually, the company will get built to go from strength to strength. in a more meaningful manner in weaker markets as opposed to stronger markets. So stronger markets give you the cash, and then hopefully the weaker markets will come, and that's when we've got to redeploy the capital in a significant manner. And so long as we do that, it will serve the investors well.
And one last thing. Earlier, we used to trade in handy sizes also, okay? In 8-9 years back, we used to have. So is it a completely no for us now, or we might look for opportunities in that segment also on dry bulk?
So I hate to say ever, you know, no, because shipping is all about uncertainty. But currently our thinking is to go for the larger sizes where we think that the longer term returns are superior to this. And then the smaller ships, you have to spend in a lot more managerial time, both on technical issues, operational issues, marketing issues, as compared to the bigger ships. So the bigger ships are easier to fix, provide you the same returns or superior returns. So why take all the other trouble?
Okay, thank you from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajesh Agarwal from Moneyore. Please go ahead.
It is the same issue. What do I thought it is the same only?
Rajesh, your line has been unmuted. Please proceed with your question.
I think he's got his answer.
Okay. We'll move to the next question from the line of Rajesh Khattar from Individual Investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I have a few very short questions. So I will just like some data points, like how much lower is the time charter rate compared to the spot rate in tankers?
So when you say time charter rate, it all depends on the duration you're talking about. And therefore, you know, there is no one answer. The longer the duration, the steeper the backwardation. Right? So, and the shorter the duration, the narrower the backwardation. So there is no easy answer to this. And also, we are still not, I mean, there are, if you had very, very modern tonnage, if you had a new building, for example, you could probably fix for 5 years. On a 10-year-old ship or a 7-year-old ship, can you fix for 5 years? Most unlikely.
Okay, so let me put it this way, like usually when you fix your ships for time charter in whichever of your four segments, you typically fix them for like 6 months or 1 year or 2 years. And so if you take an average of that, so in that sense, how much is the time charter rate lower to spot? Can you give me some indicative figure, like is it 15-20% lower? Or is it steeper than that? Just some qualitative answer on that.
Yeah. So first of all, you know, what do you call spot? I'll tell you why. I'm not trying to, I'm more than happy to answer it, but I want you to understand the business, right? What do you call spot? Do you call yesterday's rate spot? Do you call today's rate spot? Do you call tomorrow's rate spot? And this is a business where the difference between earning yesterday, today, and tomorrow could be $5,000 and $10,000 a day. Right? So what do you benchmark it with? But what you really need to understand, right, is of course, as you rightly said, we very rarely go beyond 2 years. Very, very rarely. Typically, we tend to fix for 1 year. Sometimes we will fix for a little shorter duration because a lot also depends on what the customer wants. So, you know, sometimes customers say we don't want to take a 1 year exposure. We are happy for 5-7 months. Sometimes customer says we want minimum 2 years. So it depends. But roughly, you could take the discount. The shorter the duration, maybe the discount, if you just take, you know, you freeze a certain spot rate, it could be between 5 and 20%, something like that. But the spot itself is moving daily. So what you call a 20% discount today may suddenly flip into a premium to spot or the discount may steepen from 20 to 50. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, understood. Yeah.
Yeah,
that gives me
some... Because your spot itself is moving by multiple $1,000 a day. So
right.
it's not a static number spot.
Okay, understood. So in terms of your tanker fleet, so today the rates are quite profitable for you and at multi-year highs probably. So what will make you lock in the higher rates even if you were to, let's say, fix the time charter at, let's say, 15% discount or 20% discount? You are not going for the time charter in the tanker market. So what will make you go for it?
So currently, so I think if we were really to get very concerned about some events which may possibly play out, if there was an internal view that, look, and we view this, trust me, we use this almost daily. But if there was a real concern of an event that could very significantly negative play out, and that too for a meaningful period of time, not for 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that, we may think of fixing out. Having said that, we are more inclined to remain spot, and I'll tell you why. As I said, utilization today is at 90%+, and we have seen in the past that when utilization hits these levels, the earnings can go up, you know, very steeply and very quickly, number one. Number two, we have plenty of cash on the balance sheet. So even if things go wrong, it's not as if, you know, we need to run for cover or we are worried about debt servicing, etc. Having taken a very conservative approach to leverage on the balance sheet, we are going to roll the die on the operating leverage, which is running more ships than the spot market. Now, you know, clearly today, anything that we fix for, say, 6 months or 1 year is incredibly profitable. But can the, you know, you may still leave lots of money on the table because of where utilization levels are. And then you will return.
Okay.
So, all in all, we are more inclined to be spot players. All in all.
Okay.
But again, as I was telling one of the earlier speakers, you know, we are, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, that we review this on a daily basis. So we are always in the market wanting to know what customers are willing to pay us for 6 months or 1 year. Always.
Okay, understood. So how have been the tanker rates in October and November till now compared to the rates which you witnessed from July to September quarter?
So October and November on till date, because we are in the middle of November now, on the crude side, it is stronger. On the product side, I would say on the smaller ships, it's a little weaker. On the bigger product tankers, it's a little stronger.
Okay. So when you fix...
But, you know, again, don't look at all this day-to-day, because I can tell you something today and by evening, it's all changed.
Yeah, I understand that is a standard disclaimer because I have attended all your con calls. I understand that. And I review everything.
And you've seen what can happen, right? Between one month and the other month.
Absolutely. That is absolutely fine. So, when you fix your ships on the spot, typically the journey is for how many days? I mean, I'm just trying to understand, like, is it like the spot journey is like... So also, it depends on the trade route, I understand, but trade routes where you have deployed your ships on the spot, what are the typical journey days like?
I've understood your question. So we keep changing our trade routes, right? Because we are trying to, when you have a ship on the spot, within the region you're operating, you're trying to optimize your earning. Now, within the same region. So let's say I'm trading my ship south of the Suez Canal, right? Either I may do a spot duration of 20 days because that's giving me the highest yield over the 20 days, or I may say that, all right, I'm happy to go at this rate. I don't mind fixing my ship or locking my ship for 40 to 50 days. But the average in multiple, if you just take different, regions of the world, you can say it will be somewhere between, the shortest will be 15, maybe, yeah, 15, 20 days, and the longest will be about 2 months.
Okay. Okay, understood. In this quarter's profit, is there any contribution from the sale of sheep, or that is completely on the balance sheet side?
No, it's there in the P&L.
Yeah, there's about 115 crore profit on sale of sheep. That's on standalone basis. And we have, as an earlier speaker had asked about offshore, we have 45 crore claim which was received on account of a vessel insurance, you know, in the offshore business. So that's in the consolidated accounts.
Okay. Okay. And so you had said that the LPG carriers are in time charter. So when is their time charter getting over?
So basically our customers have an option. So we fixed it for 1 year with in their option to extend it by one more year. So if they extend the option, then it will go to the middle of 24.
Okay, and their right to exercise the option is at the same price or at a higher price?
Same price.
Okay. Okay, sir. That's it from my side for now. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Garjatia from Honesty and Integrity Investment. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for providing the follow-up. In any way, can this, EU ban on Russian oil, both crude and products, can turn out to be negative for the tankers? Can you visualize any scenario that this can happen?
At the moment, no.
Okay. But actually, if it turns out to be effective, completely effective, then obviously some of the oil and products will go off the market, and the tankers who are deployed in that region might come to the rest of the region. So don't you think the demand supply might incrementally turn negative in that case?
No, so basically Russia has to find an oil for the market, right? And there are a number of owners who will be happy to continue buying Russian crude, Russian product. Because it's not as if Russia's supply completely goes off the market, where will those countries get their supply from? There is not enough global set supply to say that, all right, even if Russian exports go to zero, we as a country can provide it. No country in the world can provide it. So, I mean, and then you know what will happen to oil? You'll see that 150 plus bucks.
Yeah, that's, that I understand.
Yeah, so I don't think that you will see a situation whereby Russian exports of crude oil and petroleum products go to zero. That will not happen.
Okay.
And so long as there is oil to move, you will always find a ship to carry it. We will not do it, but there are a lot of people who may do it.
Right, right. Yeah, so, some of the values that we are seeing on the current market in terms of asset values, do you think it can have an effect of probably people are preparing to preparing for the impending ban, the ban that happens? I mean to say that some of the Russian shipping companies might be in a hurry to buy the assets, and that's why these values are inflated to that extent. Is it the case in your view?
So clearly at the moment values are being held. Let's break it up into older ships and more modern ships, right? The more modern ships have a closer relationship with new building prices. And due to all these inflationary pressures which you are all reading about, right? New building prices are at a very elevated level today. That's supporting the values of your, let's say, middle-aged to modern, to the Now, the older vessels are clearly partly being supported by the fact that there are owners willing to take Russian trades. And the very strong earnings. So even if you take a vessel which may be, you know, 2 years left for trading or 1 year left for trading, the difference in earnings between a very modern ship and that ship is not so great. So people because what is the alternative? The alternative is you say, I will scrap it, right? Now, why would you scrap a ship which is giving you a potential yield of 40 to 50%? You know?
Right.
So, there are buyers for older ships because of the very strong earnings. Of course, there are also some buyers who will be happy to trade Russia. So, it's a combination of two, three events. Eventually, even if you are willing to trade Russia, but if the market is weak, why would the asset value remain strong?
No, I mean to say, like, you know, if Russia has to export its goods, obviously their state-owned companies have to arrange for the shipping. And they might be...
A lot of other owners, just to interrupt you for a minute, there are other owners. There are Greek owners, there are Middle Eastern owners, there are Far Eastern owners who are willing to do Russian trade. It's not just Russians.
Okay.
Yeah. It's much more broadly based than, you know, prima facie it may appear.
Okay. Good. That answers my question. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devesh Chavar, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Congratulations, sir, on an excellent quarter. My question is, like, GE Shipping is trying to maximize its shareholder value by giving dividends and by doing buybacks. Most of the other players in the world are also doing the same. They are also doing buybacks. They are giving dividend. No one has done a significant capex till now. The order book is very low for tankers worldwide. So what is your outlook in the medium term? Like, everyone is, I like the approach GE Shipping is going on, but what if everyone is using the same approach in the same manner?
No. So, first of all, I think, you know, if you look at, just break it up, your one point was buybacks and dividends, right? Now, overseas, people have a lot more flexibility on buybacks than we have in India. Right. In India, as you know, between two buybacks, there's a cap of pretty close to 18 months. But overseas, you don't have that restriction. So there are regular buyback programs running. And one of the reasons why shipping companies tend to buy back is not because they don't wish to acquire tonnage. It's only because paper is cheaper than steel. So today, if we buy a ship for $100, and the equity markets are saying we value this asset at $70 or $60 because of the book discount to steel, then maybe you're better off buying paper, right? That's number one. Number two, why are people not placing orders for tankers? There are people wishing to place order for tankers, but shipyards currently are full with container orders and LNG orders. So there is very little available shipbuilding capacity that is free. And again, when I talk about shipbuilding, I'm talking about reputable shipyards. I'm not talking about every Tom, Dick, and Harry. So there are very few reputable shipyards that are available to deliver you today a tanker till second half of 25. Now, an owner will say, look, 25, what may happen, what may not happen, nobody knows. So what am I better off doing today? Especially if I'm trading at a discount to net asset value.
Okay, sir. So that answers my question. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shivan Surveya from JHP Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
So thanks for the opportunity. So just one question on the scrapping. While we can, I can understand that the scrapping on the tanker side is weak because we've got a super earning cycle. But what explains the weaker scrapping on the dry bulk side? Because these rates are like at one of the lowest levels seen. So just some thoughts on that, sir.
So even on the dry bulk, earnings are still well above operating costs. You know, and an owner does not like to scrap their ships until there is a sustained period of time when earnings are below operating costs. I think I explained this earlier also in one of the earlier investor calls that, you know, every trading day that is left in the ship is basically like a free option, right? Because markets can turn on a dime. And therefore, why would somebody want to scrap a ship when they're earning more than operating costs? See, even at today's earnings, there is a meaningful EBITDA contribution.
Okay. Okay. So, sir, at what level would this EBITDA contribution become nil? A broad understanding. That means 10% lower than the current rate, 5% lower than the current rate.
So again, if you take an average, you're talking about almost 30-40% below current rates, 50% okay. below current rates in certain classes. So there is still a long way to go. But the one thing, I must put a caveat here, that there are a lot of new rules and regulations that are kicking in from January 23. Now that itself, there will be ships that may not be able to comply with the new rules and regulations, number one. They may have to find a, they may have to be forced to scrap. There are some ships whereby customers who are also getting more conscious on decarbonization may say, we will not take vessels that do not meet certain standards on decarbonization. And some of that decision making may lead to further scrapping.
Okay, and sir,
so
what
it may not be limited to earnings drop.
Okay, and sir, according to you, what would be the percentage of fleet that would be forced to scrap, as you mentioned?
Risk, no, that's see, as I said, how many ships in the world can meet, cannot meet the statutory norms? It's impossible for us sitting in, you know, here to know, or anyone to know, for that matter. Because which ship can meet, which ship cannot meet, it's impossible to tell.
Okay, sir. Okay. Got it. Thanks for answering my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Since there are no more speakers, we can take the text questions now.
The what questions?
Yes, sir. I'll read up. There are some of the investors have put their questions in the text box. So
yes,
I'll
sure.
just read them out one by one. The first question is from Tejas Parekh, who is an individual investor, and he's asking why the tax expense is so low for us. Shiv, if you could answer that.
Yeah. Thank you for your question. We operate like about 99% of shipping. We operate under a tonnage tax regime where tax is paid not on the basis of the operating profits, but based on an income, a notional income which is calculated. So even if we make a loss, we pay that tax. So that regime has been in place for about 17, 18 years now. And we operate under that regime. And that's why the tax is low. And in some years, even if you're making zero profit, we will be paying that tax. Anjali, you can move on.
The next question is from Jatin. And he's from Invest Savvy PMS. His question is, given that the company had been investing in the rig business for almost a decade, how do you see the future of this business?
So as we've said to one of the earlier queries, that currently what we are seeing is earnings on the rig business go up. We are seeing values of the rigs go up. And utilization levels, which probably troughed a few years ago at almost 60% is now back to closer to 80%, maybe 85%, depending on whose data you look at. And therefore, in the medium term, and so long as oil prices remain closer to $100, which looks very, very likely, you should see the rig market stay pretty strong.
Thank you for that, sir. Mr. Ghanshyam Bansal, an individual investor, wants to know, of course, he's congratulating you for the good set of numbers. He also wants some clarification. If all four LPG ships were on charter, then how average realization has increased from 26,000 in the LPG segment, and when are they coming out of charter? And any
plan that I think the... Yeah, the CFO explained why that average earning has gone up. It's just simply because one of the older units, which was below the average, got sold. Consequently, the averages went up. So that's just mathematics. As to when they are coming up also, we have just answered that. The oil companies to whom we have chartered the ships have certain options. If they were to exercise the options, then we are talking about the middle, some in the middle of 24 and some in the end of 24.
He would also like to know our plans for entering the container ship segment.
Yes, so it's something we are tracking. Just for his information, the day-to-day earnings in the container market is come off, depending on the route. By about 60 to 70%, and values are down 30 to 40% in that space. They are still considerably higher than pre-COVID levels, and we would therefore be we are tracking it, but for us it's too early to enter.
He also wants to know any plans for us to reduce our dollar debt.
Well, we during the, Shiv, you want to answer that?
Yeah, we did do some prepayments. We prepaid about $45 million of debt in the first 6 months of this year. But we'll take a call on the remaining, as and when we see the cash building up. If we see cash building up and we don't see a utilization for that cash in reinvesting in the business, then we will think about further reducing the dollar debt.
Thank you. Mr. Rajesh Agarwal wants to know our outlook on the dry bulk market.
Well, at the moment, as we have just said, the market has come off. Again, I've often said that it's very difficult to give outlooks because things turn on a dime. But if we had to place a bet, we would place for the next month, 2 months maybe. We think that earnings will be broadly where they are today, give and take. But I repeat that it's very, very difficult to forecast markets for the next 30, 60 days, 90 days.
Correct, sir. Mr. Rajesh Khattar wants to know about our next dry dock schedule and how many ships and how many number of days. Mr. Khattar, I think this we can take it offline and mail it to you because, there are a couple of ships which go for dry dock every quarter and our team can help you with that. So if you can connect with us on email, I can send you those details. The next question is from Mr. Bharat Pethe. He's an investor and he wants to know if any of our current or old ships need upgradations to increase margins? And also, what are the future plans to tap new markets?
Well, I don't know. So first of all, on margins, I've not fully understood the question, but I don't think we need to spend anything towards that. Obviously, we need to spend monies towards rules and regulations, and that's an ongoing exercise for compliance, which we are all geared up to do. And that's again something that is being tracked regularly to make sure that we're always in compliance with all rules and regulations. What was the second bit of the question?
What are the plans to tap new markets? I mean, we are looking at new markets.
I mean, as we've just explained, the only possible market we may look at some point is containers. Again, that's work in progress, and other than that, we don't have any other plans at this stage.
Great, thank you, sir. I think that's all. Okay, we have one more question from Charvi Pandey of Fidelity. Will you increase dividend payouts or think of giving out special dividends given high free cash generation?
It's really something for the board to determine, based on our own internal requirements for CapEx, which we present to the board whenever we declare results. We do a presentation to the board telling them, what we think is required for purposes of modernizing the fleet and expanding the fleet. And, these one-time dividends, again, we'd rather let the board determine if they want to be in the mood to pay this one-time dividend.
Great, thanks. So that's all what's there in the text box from Chorus, if you can take this over.
Yes, there are no more questions in the audio queue. So I will now hand the conference over to Ms. Anjali Kumar for closing comments.
Thank you very much to all of you for joining this call and the discussion that we had today. Please feel free to reach out to our team for any further queries that you may have. And, of course, the transcript and the audio link of this call will be on our website in a couple of days. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Great Eastern Shipping Company Limited, that concludes today's session. Thank you for your participation. You may now click on the exit meeting to disconnect.